right, so today's parsha, we have a double portion, by the way. So we're learning today, we're learning Matos and Maaseh. Those are the last two portions of the book of Bamidbar. Okay? And we're going to do Chazak, Chazak, Viniz, Chazek. So it's two portions. So technically, we can talk about any of the portions. So we'll talk about the first part. We'll talk about Matos today. Actually, the way it works is, the first three aliyahs are always in the first parsha. So that means whenever you have a double portion, so Rishon, Sheni, and Shlishi, those are the first three portions, they're always in the first portion that you read. And Chamishi, Shishi, and Shvi are always in the second portion. And Revi is the connecting portion. Revi has part of the first portion and part of the second portion, as always. Since today is Tuesday, we're still doing the first portion, so it's appropriate we'll talk about the portion of Matos. And I think we can apply some of what we learn in the current events, and also apply to our lives. And most of us think that we love Israel. We love the Jewish people, we love Israel. And even though some of us don't live in Israel physically, but yet, our concern, our hearts, our minds, and we always think about Israel. And we do what we can from here for Israel. And, we know an army, there is always a lot of various different parts to it. The Jewish people in Israel need the Jews in the diaspora too, to be able to be a voice for them, to be able to do. I'm not saying any particular person or any particular reason, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, these are the facts of life. Now, within Israel itself, there's also, unfortunately, there's a big divide between the religious community and the non-religious community. And one of the very touchy and one of the subjects which has caused a lot of rift and a lot of bad feeling, bad blood, was the fact that the Haredi, many of the Haredi, don't serve in the army, while everybody in Israel is required to serve in the army. The Haredi have had agreements since the founding of Israel with the first president, David Ben-Gurion. They had made an agreement that yeshiva students are exempt from service to the army. As well also, the religious girls don't have to go into the full army. They can do Sheirut Lu'umi, they can do substituted. So there's been arrangements for that. But this settlement has been the source for a lot of dissent, and unfortunately sometimes a lot of misinformation, pitting one Jew against the other Jew. And it's interesting that we have a very similar story in today's parsha, in the Chumash. We have a very, very similar story, and we see how we have to be careful about that. And we can learn a lot of lessons from the story that we have in today's parsha. And again, there's no clear, everybody could interpret it, to their liking and to their, to their world view, as they think things should be. But still, it's interesting that some of the debate is there. And one of the things is that, a lot of times it's not only what is there, but it's really what is the impression that you live. What do other people think about it? How are other people view it? It's not what the real fact is, but what made it do to other people. So here we have the story. So the Jewish people were going on their way to the land of Israel, and before they came to the land of Israel, as they were standing on this side of the Jordan River, there were several major wars that were taking place over there, in which the Jews miraculously won Sichon, Og, those were very mighty warriors on the other side of the Jordan River, and they won them. And now, all the Jews are ready to cross the Jordan. So 2.5 tribes amongst the 12 tribes of Israel came to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, look, we have more than the rest of the other Jewish people. We have more cattle. We have more sheep, more a need for better grazing area, for more areas. So therefore, what are they asking from Moshe Rabbeinu? They're saying, we want to stay on this side of the Jordan River. We don't want to go into Israel. We want to stay here. We don't want to go into Israel. Now, it seems to be like a very chutzpah, you know. So here, all the Jewish people were fighting together. They went to war, and they were they had a victory. But yet, everybody fought. Now, they're going to be there. They're going to settle there. And they're going to say, everybody else, you go and you fight. You go and fight in Israel by yourselves, and we're going to be here. I mean, what kind of a justice is that? How would they even think that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to agree to something like that? I mean, how could they even expect to have such a request that everybody else... Later on, Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, well, if you go and fight ahead, which they did, but to begin with, they didn't come with that offer, they didn't come with that proposal, they didn't say that we're going to be fighting, they just said, we want to be here. Why would they get there? Why would Moshe Rabbeinu agree to something like that? Doesn't seem reasonable.
I thought you were right, but then when I was reading it this year, it seemed like they did offer spontaneously.
It was later on. Originally they said, yeah, look at it again. Yeah, look at it again. Yeah, no, they didn't offer right away. They said, we have cattle. We want this side of the. Seems like totally unfair. However, the commentators, and here is the key that I wanted to focus for a second. Some of the commentators explain that what really happened is, if you mark carefully the words, they basically said, "Asher hiko Hashem," that the whole war that took place wasn't a war that was a natural war, that was really a battle that took place in a natural way. It was really something which was totally miraculous. It was totally God. It was a non-natural event. And basically what they were saying, it's not the people that win the war. It's Hashem that wins the wars. And therefore, it really is of no consequence, which they said is of no consequence, whether we do go and we don't go, because at the end of the day, it's not us that make the difference. That's why they said, Asher hiko Hashem. If you listen to a lot of the arguments, we know that for everything we need Hashem's blessings. We need a strong army. Israel needs to do everything that it can in the natural way to be strong and be ahead in every aspect, in the physical and in the natural ways. But of course we need God's help in order to succeed. Can't do it just on the natural way. We need God's help to succeed. So the question is, how do we get Hashem's help? So some say, by the fact that we sit and study Torah and we do the mitzvahs and we do what Hashem wants, we are just as much getting the help of Hashem, just like those are fighting. So you need to fight to get Hashem's help. And you need to study Torah as well. The Rebbe brings out very beautifully. Let me see. The Rebbe brings out very beautifully. We'll see in a minute. The Rebbe says, while We have a need to have both. We need to have spiritual leaders, and we need to have people who are actively involved in physical matters. Which means there have to be people doing the regular work. People go to work, raise families, earn a living, do tzedakah, support yeshivas, do good things. We need that category. We also need a category of leaders. While everything we do in the world is really, this is God's place. The world is Hashem's place. The only thing is, we don't always see it. We don't always recognize. A lot of times, we're confused. Things are disguised. We don't see how every act that we do is really, it's something which it can be a mitzvah. It can be a good deed. It can be an expression. We can reveal the goodness, the kindness. We can make the world a better place. Every time we do something positive, we're actually adding and we're removing a layer of hiddenness of Hashem in this world. That's you accomplish by doing the regular things in a positive way. So you do what everybody else does, but you do it in a good way. Then you are revealing the goodness in the world. That means you're revealing Hashem. You're revealing God in the world. And then we have the teachers, the guides, those who spend time studying Torah, those who spend time instructing, because while you bring down and you reveal godliness, you need somebody to show you the way, the directions, to illuminate it, to make it beautiful, to enlighten it. When you're making this world into a good place, so you have to be able to have this goodness shine. That's the teachers, the rabbis, the instructors, the inspirers. They give sort of the light, the energy to what everybody else is doing to make everybody, so it's a combined effort. But there is a key here. The key is that we have to have the leaders connect with the people. You can't have it a separation. You can't have it categories, you know, in their own world. You know, a lot of times people are afraid from the world. If you get a general sense, you know, some of the Haredi people, they look at the world as a bad, and the only way that they can protect themselves is by totally insulating themselves, having nothing to do, and just living within their cocoon, within their shell, and being totally sheltered and not exposed. And that's the way they feel that they can be successful, keeping themselves and their children protected. So they make two separate categories. It's the us and them. It's the, you have a lot of people studying in the Kollel their whole life. You have a lot of people studying Torah growing, but they are separate. They are distinct. They don't want to intermingle. So the purpose of the two categories is for them to be together so that the leaders connect with the people, so that they are able to direct them and guide them to bring together a beautiful, it's like an orchestra with have all the various different instruments and tunes to make it all beautiful. But if you have it separate, it's a doll. You have one tune here, one tune there. Everybody is singing a different song and a different tune, a different instrument. You're not doing it together. So the leaders of they said, we want to stay on the other side. Okay, they said it doesn't make a difference. Hashem is taking care. But staying on the other side of the Jordan River, there was a notion by some of the people that going into Israel from the desert is something which is going to take away from their level while they were in the desert. So there was no other worries. People didn't have to worry about anything. They didn't have to worry about food because they got the manna from the heavens. They didn't have to worry about shelter. They had the clouds that were protecting them. They didn't have to worry about water because they had the well of Miriam was with them. They had everything. Life was good for them. They didn't have any worries. No mortgage to pay, no tuition bills, no anything. There was no... It was a pretty good life. And they had, Moshe Rabbeinu was there, was teaching Torah, he was speaking to God. I mean, it was a very spiritual and a very holy and a very good experience. So when the spies came and said, we can't go to Israel, besides the literal meaning, it also, the Hasidic meaning means, they say we can't go to Israel because we can't be distracted from our level of connection to Hashem by having to go and sow the land, and plow the land, and work the land, and do all kinds of work. You can't study Torah. You can't be connected. Okay. So now, it is also brought down that in a similar way, you see, like all of our forefathers, they were all shepherds. Why were they shepherds? Because a shepherd, technically, is not... He goes with the animals. It allows him a lot of time. It doesn't take up a lot of brain power. It doesn't take up a lot of effort. It's just going with the animals. And therefore, one can technically stay connected, can study or pray or be connected to Hashem. And precisely what you mentioned, before the Torah was given, like by the forefathers, that was an acceptable form of service. But once the Torah was given, the purpose of the Torah was to make a difference in the world, to change the world, to make the world a place for Hashem. And you can't do it by separating yourself. You can't do it by... So, the Bnei God, the Bnei Reuven, when they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, they say Hashem protects us. So why do we need to go and fight? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, he says to them, yes, you say that Hashem does the fighting, but literally, your brothers are going to go out on the other side. They're going to fight. And what are you going to do? You're going to sit on this side and you're going to watch them fight. Yeah, you're going to say Hashem does it. What are the Haredi basically, what is their argument? They say, well, Hashem is going to fight, so... The soldier is getting out there, he's fighting, but we're also fighting because Hashem is fighting with us. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu said? Are your brothers going to go out to fight and you're going to sit and you're going to sit there and you're going to say, well, Hashem is doing the work for us, let them go fight and we're not going to do that? Let it be Hashem is doing, but it's still, that's number one. But there's number two, which is also very important. He says, "V'lama siniun." He says, "Maybe your intentions are pure, that you are really believe 100% that Hashem is going to fight, but not everybody interprets your actions that way. A lot of the people are going to think that the reason why you're not going to fight is not because you want to study Torah; it's because you're afraid to go and fight, because you would rather somebody else get killed." Rather than you get killed. And therefore, you're just using it as an excuse. And you're saying that it's because Hashem is going to do the fighting, or my Torah is going to protect you while the other people are fighting. And that's why he's saying to them, physically, you cannot go out and sit idly by and watch somebody else fight and you sit there, number one. And number two, you will cause the other people to go ahead and perhaps get scared of it. And if I may add this old thing, it's not only that, as Rebbe elaborates in this talk, you're actually causing a separation between yourselves and the rest of the people. It's more, you're sitting over here on this side, you're not going into Israel. You're living the good life. You're living the Torah. You're a shepherd. You're working. our forefathers was before the Torah was given. They had the right to live that way. But after the Torah was given, we can't do that anymore. We must go into Israel. That's what Hashem wants us to do. It would be wrong for you just to sit here and separate yourself. I'm Haredi, I am separate. Hashem fights for us. That's exactly what the verse says. If you look at the verse, it fits exactly. And you go fight. And you go protect the country. We're not going to do that. Now, I'm not here to badmouth or say that they're wrong or anything. I'm sure there's arguments for everything. I know in Chabad, the Rebbe says, while you're studying Torah, you get a deferment. But afterwards, you go to the army and serve like everybody else does. That was the philosophy of the Rebbe. And I'm also not saying that the army is accommodating enough. I'm not saying also the army is accommodating enough for religious life. That may not be the case. And they may be guilty of that. I know they're trying, or they're saying they're trying. But yeah, it's not, I always say this. You know, the reality in Israel, those who have lived there, there's more than just the holy city of Jerusalem and the Western Wall. There's a lot going on, a lot of politics, a lot of dirty politics, and there's just a lot of different stuff. So it's not so simple. I'm not equating what's going on with Moshe Rabbeinu to what's going on today. It's a whole different story. But I'm just talking about the general idea of people separating and saying, "You go fight, but I'm going to say the Eberstadt Hashem is going to protect us, but you go fight, and I'm going to study Torah." That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was basically saying to them. He's saying, you can't go and fight, and you can't remove their hearts from them. And there's another thing here, so what happens? So what do they say? So they said, but once they said, okay, we are ready, we're going to fight, we're not afraid. On the contrary, we're going to go out to the war. We're going to be the first ones. Then we knew that the reason for their separation wasn't the real separation. It wasn't that they were afraid or they wanted to disconnect from the other people. On the contrary, they were going to conquer Eretz Yisrael for everybody else. They were going to be the first one to fight. That means they just want to be the leadership, in the sense that they're not going to be preoccupied, so they have the time and the ability to teach everybody, but they're not separating themselves because they are going over the Jordan. They are fighting. They are getting the Eretz Yisrael. That means they're connecting with the people. They're not staying on the other side. They're actually helping them. They're bringing about their inheritance, the land of Israel. They're fighting for it, and they're bringing it for them. There was another thing here. So Moshe Rabbeinu agreed, but still, after everything is said and done, it's brought down, and we're talking about the 3 weeks now when the Jewish people were exiled, the walls of Jerusalem were breached, and the people were sent into exile. It's brought down that the first ones to go to exile were actually the sons of Gad and sons of Reuven. And the 2.5 tribes that were another, they went to exile before anyone else. The verse says that. Why did they go to exile before anyone else? It says because they were hasty to get the land. Because they were hasty. In other words, it's a negative. They didn't wait, they didn't go to Israel, and they were hasty. So they didn't merit to stay there long, as they lost it before everybody else. But what was so bad? It seems like it's almost good. And it also almost seems like Moshe Rabbeinu didn't care. What was the problem over here? How come Moshe Rabbeinu allowed them to go there if it was negative? Why did he let them stay? Was it inappropriate at the end for them to stay there for what they asked for? They came and they said, they spoke nicely about the other side of the Jordan. They said, this is a land of Mikna. In other words, they were, instead of bragging about Israel, saying how beautiful Israel is, God has been telling them, I'm sending you to a land that flows milk and honey. It's a beautiful place. You're going to inherit that. So instead of saying, oh, we're going to beautiful land. Yeah, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. We're going to a beautiful place. They said, eh, I like it over here. You know, I always tell that joke. Nobody remembers my joke from the rabbi wanted to give a blessing. The rabbi wanted to give a blessing to this couple. They were very nice to him. They gave him a nice donation. So he wanted to give them a blessing. And he asked the man, he says, what kind of blessing can I give you? And he said, well, I don't need any blessings. I'm all set. You know, I have everything I need. I have no blessings. I'm good. So the rabbi said, okay, if you don't need any blessing, I'll give you a blessing. I'll give you a blessing. We should all leave Galut. We should all go to Israel. He says, wait a minute. I have an agreement with my wife. I don't do anything without her consent. I've got to ask her if she wants to go to Israel or not. I'm not going to accept that blessing. It was, I guess it wasn't the brightest bulb in town. So, huh? Yeah. So, he goes and he asks his wife, he comes back, he says, Rabbi, my wife says she has no reason to go to Israel. She loves it over here. She has what she has. She has a nice house. She has a nice garden. She has a good car. Everything is good. Life is good. I don't know. I want to go to Israel. So, no, Rabbi, no blessing. So the rabbi says, look, you know, things are good now. Everything is kind. But you know, the anti-Semites are still there, doormat. But something comes and something goes wrong. They'll all wake up. Go tell your wife that we don't belong in Galut. We belong in Israel. He says, it makes sense to me, but I got to check with her. So he goes, he comes back. He says, Rabbi, my wife has a better idea. She says, you should give a blessing that all the anti-Semites to go to Israel. We want to stay over here, she says. To say that this is good, we love our place over here. We love Israel. That's our home. That's the most beautiful place. It's the best place. That's the gift of Hashem that we have. There's nothing here that can match up everything that we have to the goodness and to the greatness, what we have in Eretz Yisrael, what we have in Israel. Now again, there's a lot of bureaucracy. This is not the Israel exactly that you imagine, what you have to deal with when you get there. But in the, after all, after everything is said and done, you know, it's like the other joke I say, you know, when you're a tourist, everything is so beautiful. But when you're in Olech Hadash, it's a whole different story. when you immigrate over there, then it's a whole nother ball game over there. But regardless, what did they say? They said, oh, this land is good. We want to stay here. We want to stay here. They didn't want to go to Israel. They say, we want to stay here. Let it be. We have cattle. We have other things. You know, a lot of people say, we can make a lot of money in the United States. We can do a lot of things over here we don't have in Israel. What did they want? And because they wanted that, why did Moshe allow that? And Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them, you're just like the Meraglim. You're just like the forefathers. They too didn't want to go to Israel. Why did they not want to go to Israel? They didn't want to go to Israel because they didn't want to deal with all these things. You also want to stay here. You want to stay Mikna. You want to be cattle. You want to be shepherds. You don't want to deal with all these things. You want to find it out. You want to be a spiritual people. You don't want to deal with the world. That was a negative. That's why they... But how come Moshe Rabbeinu didn't care about them and allowed them to stay there? Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu say, no, Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, the Jews, they asked Moshe Rabbeinu. They came to Moshe and said, please, let us stay. Moshe Rabbeinu could have just told them, no, I'm not letting you. But Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to them, but after the condition that they're going to go fight. But wasn't it bad for basically having Jews not to go into Israel. They were supposed to all go. All the tribes were, when they divided the land, all the tribes divided it equally to the land of Israel. They were going to get, everybody was going to get up. Nobody was going to stay on the other side of the Jordan. That was a change of plans, seemingly, that they took their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan River. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu agree? Okay, even if they're going to fight. But here is the key that we said before. That when the B'nai Godim, the Reuven, said to him, we are going to pass the Jordan and we are going to fight, they clarified. They made it very clear that they're not really separating themselves and they're not really becoming a different people. But they made it clear, there is still a tinge. You know, a person should still, when he has everything equal, you still have to go to Israel if you can. But as long that you're not separating yourself from Israel, but fighting for Israel and doing for Israel the way they did, they proved to Moshe Rabbeinu that while they are going to become and remain leaders, Mikna, they're not going to be so involved, but it's not going to be a separate world. It's going to be a connection. The truth of the matter is, in our own lives, we have also the two parts in our lives. We have the weekday things that we do, the regular, the ordinary things. We go shopping, we go to restaurants, we go to take care of our children, grandchildren, our families, we take care of our houses, our spouses, we do the laundry, whatever everybody is always doing. Those are the mundane things. Those are these parts that we do. And then, hopefully, we have a little time that we set aside for our neshama, for our soul. We give us some spiritual time. We give time for acts of goodness. Find some time to go to shul, to pray, to study, to come to a class, to be inspired, to be in a Jewish environment, do something for Israel, you know, spiritual part. Sometimes these parts are like decompartmentalized and they're not connected, you know. It's on two sides of the river, the Jordan River. My Jewish part and my mundane parts. At home, I'm a Jew. I have a mezuzah on the home. I go to shul, I put on a kippah. Used to have a slogan, used to say they used to say, Das Kollel movement, they used to say, Yehudi beveisecho, ve'odom betzeisecho. You're a Jew at home, but you're a man on the streets, you know, when you're outside. You have two, a schizophrenic, you know, you have two separate lives, you know. He came to the doctor, he wants a group discount, he says he's a schizophrenic, so he wants a... I'm two separate people. Sometimes I'm Jewish, and that's what I am, and that's what I do. But there's a Jordan in between them. There's a river that they don't sort of connect. You don't pass over. What is the message that we can learn from here? That there has to be that connection. The Jewish people can't afford. We have so many people on the outside that hate us, that are looking for bad for us. We can't afford amongst ourselves to look at our differences, to find fault, to hate, to despise each other, and to... It's very scary sometimes. You see, you know, especially in Israel, you know, the secular Jews and the Haredi and the religious Jews, how there's a Jordan River like in between them. We're all children of God. We're all part of the Jewish people. We're all together. We're all there. And while I believe that when Ben Gurion, in the olden days, the groups weren't so separate. even the non-religious respected the religious people who didn't go, and the people that didn't go to the army were kind and reached out to the other people. So even if they didn't go, they spend their time learning, there was that feeling that we cross over, that we don't remain two separate camps. There's not two Jewish peoples, there's only one Jewish people. And we cross the Jordan, we help each other out. When you're fighting, I'm helping you, and you're helping us, because of course, everybody's paying taxes in Israel. Who pays for all the yeshivas? Who pays for everybody? It's everybody, all of it, the secular, the religious, everybody's working is paying for it. So they're coming over on our side. We should go over on their side, which means when I say their, meaning, let's not be two separate people. Let's create bridges of understanding, places that we can meet to pass the Jordan, not to create. And the more, you want to say radical, or the more intolerant we become, we are hurting ourselves. We are really standing on the other side of the Jordan. We're not going into Israel. We're missing out on so much. In our own lives, the same thing is true. If we don't bring in that special feeling of our Judaism, in, even in the regular stuff, when we go out there and when we behave in a way which you can tell it's a refined way, you know, our language, our behavior, our code of ethics, the way we conduct ourselves, if you can see, so then you've crossed the Jordan in your own life and you've become wholesome. And you use your other talents, other abilities to support your Torah, and you use your Torah guidance to support your other part of your life. And you work it all out together as a wholesome, and you become a wholesome person, and we become a wholesome nation. Could be no better time than the time of the 3 weeks now. No better time to really think about how we can bring people together instead of looking. And of course, there is many, many on the other side, call them the other sides, who are specifically looking to antagonize, get the Haredi, you know, want to do to spite them. You know, if there is a Haredi neighborhood, they will specifically try. There's from both sides. There's troublemakers, people that are looking for you sort of live and let live. You know, everybody should do their things and with mutual respect. But it's unfortunate now is the time. We can't fix the whole world, but we can try to fix ourselves in our own little communities, our own little spheres. You know, we have the two sides, whether it's two spouses, or also can be crossing into, you know, instead of keeping that wall that separates, or the two joining, but, huh? Sure.
I find it interesting that I noticed that, like, when the Jewish people really want something, even though Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't agree with their plan, he sort of goes along with it. Sidon the Barabbin, side here. You see that, like, he hears their point of view. Again, he must ask the English to, if it's okay for them to settle here, it's okay for them. But it's sort of like says to me, as a leader, he hears what the people are saying, and even though he doesn't think it's the right thing for them to do, he's okay with it. Like, and I think that's a lot in our lives as a parent of children. It's like, you know, we sort of say it's my way or it's not. But it's sort of Hashem gives like a little bit of a leeway. Okay, if you really want to go, even though he knows what the end result's going to be. Here they went into exile before. The Meraglim caused tremendous distress. So you could say, well, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu say absolutely not? I guess he sort of allows us to make our own choices and our own mistakes.
So it's negative, right, that they were.
At the end of the day, it wasn't as negative because they already agreed that they're going to go to the other side. But still, everything being equal, you should be in Israel. You know, don't. Maybe they had, you know, you have, if you have a very good reason. But you still, I know, maybe we can allow you, but it's still not, it's not the first choice. It's only one.
They were exiled first, right?
What?
They were exiled first.
That's right. That's why they're still, but it's not as severe because they really showed and they transferred and they went over to the other side. So they did whatever they could to show that, and yet it wasn't fully enough. Yes, it wasn't fully enough. And Moshe Rabbeinu allowed for that because it was mostly okay. But like I said, if everything equal, you should still choose to be in Eretz Yisrael, unless you have a very good reason, yeah?
I'm thinking about what I've been in this past weeks a lot about this announcement.
Right.
The story of Ariel Sharon.
Right.
To the Rebbe and saying, Rebbe, why don't you come to Israel? Ariel Sharon continued on. I am a head soldier in the army, and when you are a leader, everyone follows you. And the Rebbe answered, when the ship is sinking, you're the last.
Yep.
So, is that in mind that in the
Galut
we are sleeping?
Well, that was the there's a lot of things that are coming out now, which I don't know, but this is what I just read recently. But the Rebbe had, this would be like, but I read it. I mean, it's still not very well known, but the Rebbe had very intimate connection with the Israeli Mossad. The Rebbe worked in various different countries. I don't want to say that the Rebbe was an agent of the Mossad. I don't want to go that far. But to an extent, the Rebbe helped Jews in Russia, Jews in Africa, in all kinds of places. So when you're saying about that, the Rebbe needed to be here to provide the help that he could. The Rebbe was useful over here more than anywhere else. But you really also have to understand, besides that answer, there is no such a thing in the world that I've ever seen, that I've ever encountered, a devotion from one person to another person. Never seen, you know where I'm going with this. I've seen spouses in love, I've seen parents and children in love, I've seen grandparents and grandchildren. I've seen Hasidim devoted to their Rebbe. I've never seen a devotion like the Rebbe to his father-in-law. It is non-existent. It doesn't exist anywhere in the world. A subjugation and a devotion and a total self-negation, non-existence in front of the Rebbe. The Rebbe considered himself in the presence of his father-in-law like nothing. Mind you, the Rebbe the genius, the Rebbe the leader, the Rebbe the knowledgeable. And you, if you try to measure that, you know, by our, you know, minds, you know, the Rebbe, if you look at the Rebbe's tombstone, by the Rebbe it says the genius. It doesn't say that by his father-in-law. The Rebbe was a genius, and there is a quality. Yet, this is where the Rebbe's truth service to the Hashem was, it wasn't about him at all. He was totally subjugated. The Rebbe never considered himself, in all of his leadership, the Rebbe says, my father-in-law, the Rebbe. The Rebbe never considered himself that he's a Rebbe. It's his father-in-law who's the Rebbe. He's sort of filling in, stepping in. He's just like doing, but he never considered himself. Never would say one word. There was no recognition of pride. The most, if he'd get like a greeting for his birthday from the President of the United States, the Rebbe would say, well, I'm, you know, the privilege to heading the Chabad movement, you know, or so whatever as now point, but Rebbe never always considered. Why do I say this? The Rebbe would not leave the cemetery, the Rebbe would not leave the Ohel where his previous Rebbe was interned. The Rebbe went there all the time, he prayed there all the time, he was there, he would come back. He would speak to him, he would pray to him. You know, it was... So, the Rebbe wouldn't go anywhere without, you know... The Rebbe, now we're talking about this summer, the Rebbe never took a vacation, never left work. There was no such a thing as a vacation, time off. It wasn't such a thing. It's hard for us to comprehend, you know, really. It's a different kind of a person. I mean, it's a different kind of a person. And therefore, the Rebbe would not leave. Besides everything else, so the Rebbe had a tremendous amount. The Rebbe didn't live for himself. He lived for the mission that he was given. His father-in-law placed him here. His father-in-law left him. The Rebbe was terribly, terribly devastated by the passing of his father-in-law. We read the Rebbe's letter. He was devastated. But the Rebbe placed him here, and the Rebbe continued to do that.
I don't think that there's another rabbi or Rebbe that took such an interest in complete rural Jewry, not just his own little sect. Everybody came by the Rebbe, and not only that, when you go now to the Ohel, you see everybody coming, whether you're wearing, right? Doesn't make a difference what you look like or what you're wearing, that took an interest in the land of Israel, the politics of Israel, everything that was going on in world Jewry all over the world. I don't think that we've met anybody like that, you know, like to such an extent. I think that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was all about. Moshe Rabbeinu worried about it.
But the Rebbe, okay, yeah, but the Rebbe, yeah, that's absolutely. But the Rebbe did it all as an extension of his father-in-law, not because he's doing it. Not that it's just his father-in-law was working. That was it. It was his father-in-law. That's it. He didn't think that he was doing anything. That it's interesting. The letter I just want to tell Sarah also. We learned this morning. It was very a very powerful letter. Somebody wrote to the Rebbe. We said this morning. Somebody wrote to the Rebbe that he gave up a year ago. He used to teach children, and he said to the Rebbe already a year ago he gave it up. He's more busy. It looks like it doesn't say the whole thing there, but. It looks like he's studying himself, you know. He was a great rabbi, and he's studying more. And the Rebbe writes back, he says, I'm shocked. I was shocked to read that you gave up educating children. He says, there is such danger out there. And the Rebbe gives him a metaphor. He says, if you're standing by the edge of the river, and you are involved in studying something really deep, and something really meaningful to you, and you see somebody drowning, are you going to say, oh, okay, no, I'm too busy studying and somebody's drowning over there, I can't attend to that? Sure not. So the Rebbe says, how could you be busy studying with yourself when there's so much to be done out there? It's so necessary. We need you. We need you to teach. We need you to be there. You need to help. Then you can't stand by idly. Further, the Rebbe says, and this is even more important, because the Rebbe always said, well, we also read in the Rebbe's letters, in the beginning when the Rebbe started out, the Rebbe had nothing really. He didn't have chassidim, he didn't have money, the Rebbe created all this. What did the Rebbe say? So there was young people, and the Rebbe started filling posts in South America, in Brazil, in Argentina, in you know, that time it wasn't the Soviet Union, yes, that was before that. So this parent, who is a chassid of the Rebbe, wrote apparently to the Rebbe a very heartfelt letter. His son, his daughter became a kala to this young, brilliant young man. And the Rebbe is sending him away to Argentina or to Brazil or to, I don't know where he's sending him, somewhere in South America. And the guy writes to the Rebbe, he says, how could the Rebbe do this to him? He finally is having some nachas. He wants to have his grandchildren next to him, and you know. And the Rebbe writes them very gently, strong but gently. Rebbe says, you know, I don't send anybody. I don't force anybody. I don't force anybody to do anything. You know, like the Rebbe says, Moshe Rabbeinu listens to you. If he doesn't want to go, he don't go. But the Rebbe goes through the great effort explaining to him. He says, but don't you understand? The Rebbe says, you think that I'm sending your son-in-law, your daughter, for them to benefit the community over there. No, I'm sending it for them. He says, your son-in-law has tremendous amount of talent. Your daughter has tremendous amount of talent. They'll come here, they'll be stifled. They'll become leaders over the community. They'll expand. They'll use all their energies. They'll create a following. They will be able to impact people. They will build, they will make, you'll have the greatest. It's not for the people there, it's for your children, it's for you. It's gonna have the greatest nachas. Don't be worried, you know, it's a plane right away, you know, you'll get there. It's nothing. And the Rebbe, so the Rebbe basically says, which reminds me that my father, may rest in peace, used to tell me, My father was in education, but when he came to this country, he didn't have, he was a little bit of a shaykhet, he was a ritual slaughterer. But then, he didn't like the way they did it in America, it was too quick. So, and he, as a matter of fact, after this short stint with Shechita in America, he went to Colorado over there, it was before I was born. And he never touched meat anymore because he just didn't like what they, he didn't like what he saw. He was a religious man. He wouldn't eat any meat. Never touched meat. He ate chicken, but not meat. He wouldn't eat beef. He wouldn't eat. Never. Not salami. Nothing. No, he didn't eat anything that comes. When anything was nothing. Just didn't eat anything. Zero. But he became a diamond polisher. You know, he worked. So the Rebbe once expressed, like to somebody else, he says, look what happened to such a talented young, you know, like my father, he would say, my father used to repeat it to me. He says, instead of being some leader somewhere, some Rosh Yeshiva or some rabbi, he became a diamond polisher. So what, in other words, what is he doing with his life? He could have been that. I feel that way, you know, when the Rebbe sent us for Shlichus, so, okay, he made us into, he gave us an opportunity, not, he didn't do the people a favor. He did us a favor. He did us a favor. He gave us a job to do, to go ahead and do something. He developed the people. That's what he did. The people that he sent, he made them into people. So the Rebbe says over there, but the Rebbe says in this letter, the Rebbe says, when you help somebody else, actually, Hashem helps you to be so much more successful in your studies. So, actually, the Rebbe says to him, you should be thankful for Hashem. It's not wasting your time. When you're helping somebody else out and helping him learn, you're going to be able to catch what you're learning 1,000 times quicker than you would do it otherwise. So the time that you spend is not a waste of time. You're actually gaining Hashem's blessing. So it's for your benefit. It's for your benefit. If you help another person, you're not losing out. You're actually gaining. You're gaining a tremendous amount. I just want to say this. I'm afraid that I came across, I'm not here to rule about, you know, about the army or about the Haredi. I'm not in the position. I know there's a lot of difference of opinion, and I leave it to the great rabbis. I just wanted to bring an analogy that somehow there's a little bit of a connection that we got to be careful in the perception, even though it may be the right thing or not the right thing. I don't want it to come out that I don't really have an opinion because I'm not big enough or smart enough to understand the what goes into it. But I understand there's a lot of struggles and there's a lot of challenges and there's a lot of details in it, and I understand that the leadership itself is not, can't figure it out. A lot of people are going different ways. So I don't want to be sort of a voice, notwithstanding. I just felt that the Parsha sort of addresses it pretty in a pretty direct way, by saying that some people say Hashem is going to protect you, but the other one going to fight. So it's not easy. There is definitely some sort of a connection. But let's hope that Hashem will show us miracles and show us and send us Mashiach and help the Jewish people, and then we won't need to fight at all.